quorum, Senators Ellis, Senator Donnelly, and myself, Senator Taylor Chair. Senator Cowdery is also present. The first matter we have before us is H. Connor Thomas, a confirmation hearing on his appointment to the Ethics Committee. Is Mr. Thomas present?
I am.
Mr. Thomas, first let me thank you on behalf of the committee for volunteering to serve. We appreciate that very much. I would like, if you could, to give the committee a brief resume or such comments as you believe would be important for the committee in evaluating your appointment. Thank you. If you'd go forward.
Thank you. I've served on the committee for one term. This would be, if confirmed, my second opportunity to serve on the committee. And to begin with, yeah, I sort of feel like that I've just now really learned what my role is and the usefulness, actually, of the Ethics Committee. I am an attorney. I've been practicing law in Nome since 1978. Worked in a variety of areas here. Started off at the Alaska Legal Services, worked at the Public Defender's Office, so I was a magistrate for a while, and I've been in a private practice since 1986 in a small little general practice firm downtown. So that's my background, and I found the work on the committee to be interesting. I feel like it is a public service. I also find that the time commitment is not too great, that it interferes with my other employment, which is active practicing law.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Thomas. Especially, I want to thank you for your service over the last year. Also, I meant to say that in my opening comment. Are there questions by the committee members?
So,
Senator Donnelly, go right ahead.
Have we already confirmed Mr. Thomas and he's up for a second term?
Yes.
Okay.
That's my understanding. You were confirmed by this committee previously, weren't you, Mr. Thomas?
That's correct. The first service.
Mr. Thomas, have you had a chance to review some of the changes in the ethics law that passed with Senate Bill 103, I guess it was?
Well, actually, I have not had a chance to review in depth any of those changes. I am aware that did occur, but I don't feel in a position to comment, with any substance regarding this.
Okay. It's just that there were a couple of those that seemed, I'm sure you all gave it a lot of thought and came to your best conclusion on them, but a couple of those were specifically directed at decisions of the Ethics Committee, and you may have felt constrained by the way the particular statute was written and to do something that you might not necessarily even have agreed with. One that comes to mind particularly was the ethics opinion that said that somehow it would be improper for the state to ship like computers that legislators had bought on their own but were using in their office for state business, using state resources to ship those computers. That was one of the provisions in 103 that was directly overturned, one of the decisions. I just really never understood that decision. It didn't make any sense to me because, for a long time, it was very hard to get any equipment out of the state, the leadership in the legislature. I can remember some big battles we had just trying to get Macintoshes. And people would tend to go buy their own equipment, pay for it, with their own funds or campaign funds, and to say that it wasn't appropriate for the state to bring, to pay to bring those computers down so that people could use those computers for state business, never made any sense to me. So occasionally, it seems to me the Ethics Committee, they got a little carried away. I didn't get it. Maybe y'all felt constrained by the way this specific statute was written, but the result didn't seem to make a lot of common sense to me. That's just my only comment, Mr. Chairman. Hopefully some of those little glitches have been fixed now in Senate Bill 103.
Did you wish to comment?
Well, I don't think I can comment on that particular opinion. Actually, I wasn't part of the group at the time that decision was rendered. I can say that based on my experience on the committee, though, that people do spend quite a bit of time looking at the real impact of what the decision is going to be. And as was correctly pointed out, we are constrained to some extent by the language in the, or not to some extent, to a large extent by the language in the statute. And it may be that was the reasoning of the committee at that time, that it just didn't fit with the language. And so even though something may have a common sense outcome, if it's contrary to the clear statutory language, then I don't think the committee really has a lot of choice. And ultimately it comes back to where it has in this case for the legislature to make a decision about whether or not it should be modified. So, but I can understand that any individual given set of facts may result in an odd result at times.
Yeah, that's certainly one of the big challenges with ethics laws is trying to craft them in such a way that it applies reasonably to the vast majority of circumstances. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Thomas, you are constrained, I believe, just as both Senator Donnelly, myself, and any other lawyer that serves in public office is constrained to reveal in your APOC disclosure a list of all clients from whom you received more than X number of dollars. I don't even remember now what the limitation is.
$1,000.
It's $1,000, okay. But it used to be $100. And you're also constrained, I believe, at least we as legislators are, to provide a separate listing of any client on whose behalf you may have contacted a state agency, and to list what that agency is. Would you give me your opinion as to the inherent conflict that exists between the legal canons of ethics that you and I are sworn to uphold and carry out, and the requirements of that disclosure?
Well, I think that the problem that a lot of people have with that is that when somebody comes into your office, as you're well aware, they expect you to keep the matter confidential, unless you obviously end up in court. And a lot of the situations that we deal with don't go to court. People are coming in for various reasons, and some people are unhappy with the fact that their name's going to appear in a list somewhere as having come in and consulted with an attorney. And so I think that's the conflict as I see it, and as I understand some people have a very strong feeling that they shouldn't have to disclose that, and in fact if refused to serve on this committee or others as a result of that. So that's the, that's the conflict. I've given it quite a bit of thought, actually, and I happen to think that it's appropriate because of the possibility of a significant financial connection that may influence a decision one way or the other. So, but I definitely understand that.
I wasn't arguing or just really indicating whether or not it was appropriate. I share with you the concerns about misuse of office by those who might fail to disclose such a conflict. I can only, I guess I would ask this. You also report, I would assume, the clients of your associates within the firm, too, don't you?
That's correct.
F- For some years, I maintained a practice in Petersburg, Alaska, with an associate, and also in Wrangell with a couple associates, and did exactly the same thing. And in those days, we used to send it in, and it was a separate submission, so to speak, to APOC, where you placed that in an envelope and you wrote confidential on it or some darn thing, and but you had to submit it. So we submitted all those good things, and unbeknownst to me, and I think I'm the only one that's ever had this happen in the history of the state so far, newspaper decided they didn't like me very much, so they published all of those contacts between my offices and state agencies. And they published that in the newspaper with the client's names and, of course, what agency had been contacted. And as you said, that's appropriate, I guess. The difficulty arose for me when I received a phone call from a family in Petersburg, because that's how their 7-year-old daughter found out she was adopted, was by reading it in the newspaper. Needless to say, that office didn't see a new client come through the door for about 3 months, and my associate decided that he could not live under that sort of a constraint and practice law meaningfully within the canons of ethics, as both he and I agreed they should be practiced. But so that office got shut down. That's the conflict that I'm referring to, is that my associate had to have his name published, the client's name published, and the fact that he had been required by the law to contact the Department of Health and Social Services at that time to get confirmation that he could move forward with an adoption. These things do have effect, I guess, is the reason I raise this point. And I still believe in the appropriateness. I've watched people in this legislature call themselves consultants and make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year working for various interests. And when asked by the press what they did for those dollars, they said, well, they secured permits for them through state agencies. And I think they were probably well paid and well worth it. I don't think it was an appropriate action or something they should have been doing, and out of it came laws like we're discussing here. So it definitely is probably appropriate, but I just am troubled, and I'm glad to hear that you have thought upon the subject too, as involves professionals who choose to volunteer for public service, that this does have, as you indicated, a chilling impact upon candidates. And I can certainly tell you it does on those who practice law, because I think I'm the only one that actually maintains an active practice of law. But just with those thoughts, I wanted you to understand the basis and reason for my question, Mr. Thomas, and I appreciate the candor of your answer and the thoughtfulness of it. Are there other questions?
I just might add, I sort of came to that issue on the other side of it. When I started out, I said, I can't believe that they're asking this, and I don't think it's appropriate, and this can't be right. And then after going through the statutes, determined, of course, that is exactly what they're asking. And then my position did change after thinking about it a little while.
Now, one interesting aspect you might think on a bit, and maybe share your thoughts with me at some other time, because I know we're not going to change any of these things today. The privilege is actually a privilege that belongs to the client. And I think that probably in your firm, as with many that have been faced with this, I know Sean used to tell me the same thing, that each client had to sign a piece of paper as you became a client of the firm, volunteering that those matters that you were discussing with that attorney could be made public through this process. Do you do that in your firm?
No, we don't, and I don't wouldn't intend to release to somebody the matters that we were actually discussing. All that's released is the name of a person who has paid us over $1,000.
Well, if you have contact with a state agency, I think you have to disclose that, don't you?
Yeah. Well, that, I don't have that type of practice, so that's not really ever going to be.
Yeah, I didn't think I did either. In a whole year, I think we had like five things. An alcoholic beverage control board thing where you had to post some license because some bar got bought or sold, and a couple adoptions and a few things like that. I didn't think I had one either, but actually you do end up making some contact with state agencies at times. And it's just something to think about, Mr. Thomas, and as an attorney and one that has thought about this, I appreciate your comments and any thoughts you might have in the future on that. I'd really appreciate hearing from you on them. That's really probably a discussion for another day. So, but thank you very much for that. Are there further questions of Mr. Thomas? Is there anything further you'd like to add, Mr. Thomas?
No, thank you, Senator.
And thank you again for your service, and we appreciate your willingness to serve in the future. Chair, to entertain a motion. Senator Cowdery.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to accept H. Palmer Thomas to be set appointed to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics.
Yep.
And ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? There being no objection, the standard letter will be issued. If you'll just hand it out to John there. Thank you again, Mr. Thomas. The next matter before us is Bonnie L. Is it Maynor? Maynor, right.
Yes.
Bonnie, go right ahead. Thank you.
Okay, you would like a little bit of a resume from me?
A little background just for the committee's information.
Well, I'm about a 40-year resident of Alaska, and I've been practicing real estate in Anchorage for the past 27 years. I'm pretty active in the community. I serve as chair of the Alaska Community Foundation. I'm a trustee on Alaska Pacific University's board, active in Serafimus, and have actually was appointed by Justice Spade in May to fill out a term of another attorney who recused himself from the committee, I think, for many of the points that you were just discussing my previous predecessor that you were talking to.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on several committee meetings. It's been very interesting. It's very, minute discussion of ethics and detail, and of course that comes into play in my business life also, and I find it very interesting. As Kurt said, it's not overwhelming amount of time commitment, so it's been something that I've been able to do.
Well, I thank you for your service. We appreciate that very much and your willingness to serve in the future. Do committee members have any questions for Ms. Mayor? Maynor, excuse me. Apparently there are no questions, Bonnie. Thank you very much. Anything further or in closing you'd like to say?
No, I think unless you have any questions, I'd be happy to ask them, but otherwise, I'll leave it to you.
Okay, thank you. Chair, to entertain a motion. Senator Cowdery.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to accept Bonnie, is that Maynor?
Maynor.
Maynor. Mm-hmm. To be appointed to the Board of Select Committee on Legislative Ethics and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? There being no objection, the same form letter will issue. And again, thank you, Bonnie.
All right, thank you very much.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Arthur S. Robinson. Are you on, Mr. Robinson? Had Mr. Robinson contacted us, sir?
He's supposed to be on.
That's what I thought. What lines were we supposed to be reaching him on, do you know?
Is Saul not online?
No, he's not listed online. It doesn't look like
Kenai?
He's called in. No.
He would have been coming out of Kenai, probably. Well, I guess we can't take that one up, so. Anything further? Good to see everybody. It'll be my intention that we will try to run committee hearings three times a week, but with everyone's busy schedules, it appears as though Fridays may be difficult in the future, so we'll try to do most of our work Mondays and Wednesdays, and attempt to just roll things over on a Friday, hoping we have a quorum to maybe conclude or take reports back or whatever.
Mr. Chairman, what sort of issues and types of legislation do you expect to be the major focus of your committee this year?
I really don't have any agenda, John, and haven't really looked much. I looked at some of the stuff that was left over from last year. There's some liability immunity stuff that the House is going to ship to us. There's we already have equine immunity in front of us, and we're working on that. There's a couple insurance-y kind of things that look like they're kind of just housekeeping sort of stuff. I'm sure we're going to get some interesting stuff for the years out, but right now we don't have a great deal in front of us. One thing that I know Senator Welcome wanted us to take up and was on domestic law, and that was whether or not couples could get a legal or binding separation as opposed to a divorce. And that it's a topic that's certainly worth discussion, and we should decide on whether or not we want to move forward on that. And I really don't have any opinion on it at this point. Other than that, off the top of my head, I can't think of any major items. Did you have some in mind?
Not at this time. I'll go back and look at the list as
sure,
well.
Sure, please. Yeah. And John or Dave, if you have anything specific, just let me know and we'll take a look at her.
Okay. I'm looking at some legislation on DWI issues and mandatory insurance issues. So
I think we still have. Remember one of those DWI bills on forfeiture of license. The governor has one in, and I think Senator Ward had one in too, if I'm not mistaken.
Well,
we may have moved
in. I talked with the Anchorage police people. Right now, on the breathalyzer thing, you pull somebody over and it's suspected. If they refuse it, it's sort of an admission, sort of. But the paperwork involved for the cop that does it is about 4 hours that he's off the street. That he has to do to get to the prosecutor to make sure that this thing holds.
Hmm.
I'm trying to work some system. Other states, I'm researching how they do it to let the cops spend more time on the street and less time in doing the paperwork. A lot of times that's overtime time, too.
I can tell you when I was a judge that if somebody walked through the door with the complaint and all the police paperwork already done, that it took a minimum of 37 different pages just to process them
yeah.
through the court system, which seemed to me overwhelming at the time, too, and that there ought to be an easier way to do it. But much of it is the way they draw the regs and how they've set up the administrative procedure.
Well, I had some, just patrol officers contact me, and we're working with them trying to see how other states have did similar things and speed up the process to put the cops on the streets. That's what we hire them for.
You betcha. Okay, if there's nothing else, we are adjourned. And thank you.